Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Last week, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reacted to the pending indictment charges on bribery and fraud. Now, he has called it a witch hunt by the left, and we're going to be talking about that. Is it a witch hunt? And if it is, even if it is, should he do what his opposer, Benny Gantz, says right after Benjamin Netanyahu gave his speech, saying that this was a witch hunt against not only him, but his wife and his child, his family? He was followed by Benny Gantz from the left wing, the blue and white bloc with Yair Lapid, and he was saying that Benjamin Netanyahu should now step down. He should resign. Because how can you run the country when you are trying to fight these charges? He's going to be busy with his lawyers, with his defense. Does he have a point? And even if he does have a point, is he right? Is he correct? We'd love to hear from you. You can call into the show. This is a live show. If you're listening between 4 to 5 p.m. Holy Time right here in the land of Israel, or if it's between 9 to 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern Time on Sunday morning, that means that we are live and you can phone in. We're going to be speaking with Yisrael Meidad, who's going to be explaining exactly what these charges are. And you can call in and say, should Bibi resign? Also, we're going to be talking about the space program that Israel has launched, a spacecraft to the moon. Is Israel going to be making a settlement up there? Everywhere we go, we make settlements. Well, that's what some of our enemies are probably thinking. And will the new elections change anything? No matter who gets elected, the status quo may stay more or less the same. Shifra Hoffman wants to weigh in on that issue. What do you think? So feel free to call into the show and also join me in the chat room. It is the orange button on our player on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. It's at the top of the page. It's going to be great to see you in the room with me there. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with me. So join me. You're listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. We'll be right back.
G'day, I'm Jono Vandoor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind,
every Thursday.
We are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. And we're talking about what happened last week as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reacted to the pending indictment charges of bribery and fraud, he calling it a witch hunt by the left. And here to talk to us more about this, to give us a better background, a better understanding, we have joining us Yisrael Meidad. He is an American-born Israeli journalist and author. Until the last year or so, he retired from being the director of educational programming and information resources at the Menachem Begin Heritage Center here in Jerusalem. Today, he is a member of the executive board of Israel's Media Watch and its vice chairman. He has published many opinion articles in the Israeli and international press on political issues, and he's been interviewed on prominent TV programs for CBS, the BBC, CNN, and other international outlets. You can follow him through his blog called myrightword.blogspot.com. Welcome to the show, Yisrael Medad.
Tamar, thank you very much for having me on.
It's very good to have you here. So why don't we start out with people who are a little bit unfamiliar with what's going on. Explain to everybody what are these bribery and fraud indictments charges that they want to charge him with?
Well, originally we're talking about four cases that have developed over a period of maybe 2 years or more, in which Mr. Netanyahu has been suspect of taking bribery, not in the form of money, but in the form of pink champagne, cigars, plastic chairs, and some other items. The most serious of them was a talk supposedly conducted between him and the owner-publisher of Yediot Achronot, basically the largest media outlet here in Israel, in which Mr. Netanyahu supposedly suggested that he get better coverage in Yediot Achronot in exchange for something which never really happened. So a lot of people are very scratching their heads, to tell you the truth, because usually we're talking about politicians and bribery. We're talking about tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars or something like that, and this is nowhere near this. And as you correctly said, the Attorney General basically said he is announcing his intention to press forward with indictments, but there still is a process called a hearing here, which is very unusual, but it's an Israeli practice. That may take several months.
Okay, you had said that he had made some type of deal, that's what they're saying he did, between Yediot Achronot, which is like the latest news, I guess you would translate it into English, and he would get better coverage in return for what?
That's the whole object. We don't know exactly what. The implication is that he would use his influence with Sheldon Adelson's free newspaper called Israel Today to get it to either drop its weekend edition or to do some other changes, because it was giving, and still is giving, Yediot Achronot a strong competition for the market here in Israel. And of course, everybody thinks of the press as a democratic institution defending the people's freedom. And first and foremost, it's making money for the publishers and the owners. And he was making a lot of money, and he wanted to keep to make a lot of money. This newspaper was making a lot of inroads. The whole thing falls apart, of course, because Mr. Netanyahu actually stopped the law that was to give him the advantage. So where is the quid pro quo, as they say, for the bribery? That's very unknown here among the people. We don't know, because the trial hasn't started.
Okay, there was also another charge, I understand, something about Bezeq, which is Israel's main phone company here in Israel, and a deal between Yes Television, which is a cable TV owned by the same person. There was something there also. I don't want to go into it now because we don't have a lot of time, but there are a few different indictments against him, or charges against him, I should say. Now, the reaction after he gave his speech, and Bibi went up there and he was saying how his whole family is being targeted, not just him, but also Sarah and his son, and this, and he, it looked to me like he almost broke down and cried for a second when he was talking about his family and how much they've suffered. And he was calling this a witch hunt by the left. And immediately after he spoke, they had a conference with Benny Gantz getting up in front of the microphone. And he was saying that with these serious charges against Bibi, he should do the honorable right thing, and that is to resign, because he was saying, and there is some merit to this, I'm not saying I agree with it, but he's saying that if Bibi is going to be fighting these charges and he's going to be so busy with that, he won't be able to run the country properly. What do you have to say about all of that?
Let's start from the last point. A couple of months ago, several ministers dropped out of the government. Naftali Bennett and Avigdor Lieberman and Netanyahu began to take over their ministries. And a lot of people said he can't be the prime minister, and also the foreign minister, the defense minister,
education
minister, and a few other Justice ministries in between. In the meantime, Tamar, the country is running wonderfully. Our diplomatic status is rising. Defense and security is under control. He's been flying all over the world, maybe twice a week, and everything is going okay. So I think his capability is supreme. That answers that Gantz point. The other point I want to make is two things, actually. The first is that the ability of Netanyahu to turn this into an election instrument in his favor, just as Mr. Gantz and Mr. Lapid and other contenders for the role of prime minister are using it for their political advantage, I think is going to outweigh everybody else. He's going to run this from the 10th yard line all the way into the goal line on the other side. He's going to use this to drum up support, to get identity and sympathy. And since the trial is not on, we don't know what's going to happen, which leads me to my third point. We've had ministers on trial before. Most of them have gotten off, some of them during the hearing and later during the trial. Some ministers, including Ehud Olmert, for example, was found guilty. But Mr. Ariel Sharon was not even put up on trial because of the suspicions against him because of his illness. So I think it's very fair. I know the left wing thinks it's immoral, but I think it's very fair for Mr. Netanyahu to say, I'm not on trial, I can do the job, these charges are ridiculous, and if he is found guilty by trial, then he goes to jail. But he shouldn't be allowed, we shouldn't allow this, to use this to interfere in the election process, which allows the people to vote for him or not. If he is indicted and he fails at the trial and is found guilty, that okay, he goes to jail. But don't take away from the people by demanding he resign or run out of the campaign their democratic right to vote for him.
Okay, I want to put my two cents in here, and that is that I think that what Benny Gantz said has some merit. It is going to be extremely difficult. I know you're saying everything's running fine right now, but we're only talking about, you know, a few weeks. We're not talking about something that may be prolonged and very prolonged. But I say it has some merit to it. However, on the other hand, this is what's called harassment. And any time the left wants to attack somebody on the right, all they have to do is throw all of these bogus charges or what that, you know, now I heard on Fox News that they're trying to find everything in Trump's businesses to look through all the paperwork of his businesses to see if he did anything wrong there so they can charge him with those things too. It's just going to be one after another. Anything that the left can find on the candidates that they don't want on the opposite side, on the right, they are going to use. And this is called harassment. And if they get away with this, even though he's right, he may not be able to do such a good job running the country if he has to be speaking with his lawyers and doing strategy and trying to defend himself. But at the same time, a person is considered or is presumed innocent until he's proved guilty. And B, this could just be more and more encouragement for the left to throw harassment cases at people so they can't function. So they get them out of office when they may be innocent. What do you have to say about that?
Tamar, one thing probably most of our listeners do not know because they don't follow the news daily is that the Attorney General, who is in charge of pressing the indictment, has been harassed by left-wing demonstrators at his office, at his home, at the synagogue. One of the supporters of the anti-Netanyahu campaign defaced his father's grave. That seems to go under the radar or is ignored. That type of violent harassment, and when I say violent, I also mean loud shouting and name-calling. I call that verbal violence. That's been pressed against the Attorney General to influence him to make the charges before the election. Okay, we're not saying the Attorney General cannot file the accusations or the indictment, but what I'm trying to say is at this time, he could have waited another 6 weeks and then dropped the bombshell. Doing it now is interfering in the electoral process by seemingly pointing the finger that now he's not worthy of your vote because he could be a criminal. And that is wrong.
It could backfire, too, as you had mentioned earlier, that this could cause a lot of sympathy for the prime minister and people who were hesitating. They're vacillating. They don't know who to vote for. They might indeed cast their vote for Likud just to stop this. I want to thank you very, very much for coming on. Again, we were speaking with Yisrael Meidad. He is a blogger. You can follow him on his blog at myrightword.blogspot.com. We will post that on the podcast where it is posted. Thank you so much for coming on the show and explaining all of these things to our listeners.
Tamar, thank you for the opportunity. Bye-bye.
Wonderful to have you on. And when we get back from the break, we are going to be speaking with Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem on the spacecraft that Israel sent to the moon. Did you know that Israel had a space program going already in the 1960s? He's going to tell us a little bit about that as well. So all of this coming up. Don't go anywhere. Remember, you can call in if you have any comments or questions. We're looking forward to taking your call.
Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. And we are speaking now with Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem about the space program in Israel. Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem is a researcher, former lecturer at Ben-Gurion University, and has authored over 60 books and 400 research papers on science, political science, and more. He commentates on Mideast and world issues. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's very, very good to have you on. So I want to start this out with, there was a article published on the Jerusalem Post just recently by someone named, I think he's a rabbi, Michoel Green. He wrote a tongue-in-cheek piece about how the world would now condemn Israel for launching a spacecraft to the moon. It was called, quote, the newest illegal Israeli settlement. And he was writing, is it just me or is anyone else waiting for the United Nations to condemn Israel for illegally occupying outer space? Even worse, they're planning illegal settlement expansion there on the moon. The Zionist regime is guilty of insolently spreading its racist message throughout the solar system. Now, again, this is tongue-in-cheek what he's writing, but do you think that he's that far off?
No, not at all. There was an article written, I forget when, I think about, not really an article, sort of a short story written about, I think, 5 years ago. Someone, all of the Jews in the world had been relocated to Mars, and what would happen to the world? Basically, their conclusion was that the world would essentially descend into chaos and total war all over the world. And there were some sound reasons for that. But what you're saying is really an interesting concept, because there really is, if you look over things over the last 1,962 years of European organized anti-Semitism, there has never been a reason for the anti-Semitism. There's never been a good reason. There's never been something that you can say the Jews really did do. It never happened.
So?
And as you know, I've talked about that for the last several months. There's not a single case where you can actually say that the Jews were actually guilty of doing something that deserved punishment or deserved for whatever. I mean, you can talk about the concept of deicide, if you like, and that to some people that might make sense, but other than that, there really is nothing whatsoever that can be pointed to throughout all the history of European anthem that really made any sense.
So tell us more. Tell us more. You were going to speak about also how the Israel had a program for a space program already in the 1960s.
Well, the first this first space flight, and I suppose one might put that into double quotation marks, flown by Israel was in July 1961 when a Shavit 2 rocket was launched into space with a meteorological instrumentation to look at things that would affect weather and rainfall and things like that. And of course, Israel has always had issues of rainfall. And this was during the prime ministry of David Ben-Gurion. And in that sense, Israel was actually the third country in the world after the Soviet Union, which was the first, the United States the second, and Israel the third, to actually go into space. Perhaps one is needful here of a formal definition. Space begins at height of 140 kilometers above the surface of the planet. That's the formal definition of space.
Okay.
So Israel was the third country to do that, and as a matter of fact, the first satellite in orbit, the OPIC-1 in 1988, was launched by essentially the same missile. Some senses, of course, but basically the same missile, the Shavit 2. I think it was the Shavit 3 at the time, but it was basically the same configuration. So keep going. Have been active in space exploration and in these types for quite some time.
Okay, but why? What was our first, at that time in the 1960s, we weren't looking to go to the moon. We were just trying to survive as a country. We still had all of this animosity. There was no peace treaties with any Arab countries. They all wanted to slit our throats. They probably still do. But in any case, what was the purpose? Was it for defense? Were we looking to be able to protect ourselves better? What?
Well, anything that you do in that sense, in terms of technology, has ramifications, technological ramifications. So if you're putting up a meteorological probe, then you're also putting it up via a rocket, which can also be used for other additional things. So while the Shavit has never been used in any military sense, there are derivatives of it that have been. Now, we have to remember that in the 1960s, Gamal Abdel Nasser was promoting in Egypt a very major program of rocket development using Nazi scientists and engineers to create an Arab for the purpose of exterminating Israel and all the Jews in it. So I would imagine, and this is not, I don't know of any documentation of this, I would imagine that David Ben-Gurion clearly had in mind that let's let the Egyptians know that we're not sitting here idly. And also at the same time, the United States was also supplying Egypt with rockets at the time. And I suppose we also had a slight message to the United States and to the Soviet Union at the same time as well, that we're not really sitting here idly and twiddling our thumbs. We're also active, and you might want to pay attention to this.
All right. So where do you see, let's look forward now. Let's say that the spacecraft that we sent up into space towards the moon actually completes its mission. It lands on the moon. Then what? And what's the purpose?
Okay. Well, yeah, I've got a few things here. And your question, what's the purpose, is a very appropriate question. First of all, there are two basic objectives of the program. And none of them are directly linked to the.
Well, the Skype connection
the
is
idea
very,
of
very
moon per se.
Bad. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, one is educational. We want children in Israel to be aware of science and technology, of engineering, and want them to be interested. And in fact, tomorrow morning, I'm supposed to be giving a lecture at a kindergarten to 6-year-old children who have demanded to know more from their kindergarten teacher, to know more about space exploration. And she's invited me to come and give them a lecture, as I did last year as well, before Bereshit.
That's very cute.
And second objective here is a technological objective, since developing a probe of this sort has many, many technological ramifications, from materials engineering and electronics and communications and optics and et cetera, so this is clearly a very healthy development in terms of our basic technological prowess and our capabilities in many, many areas, not just on the moon itself. And there are also missions on the moon itself where we're measuring some very interesting magnetic fields and magnetic questions and making some measurements concerning the age of the moon and how it came about. So there are scientific issues here as well, but
so do you think
the immediate basic objectives are, as I said, education and technology.
So I'm asking you a little bit seriously and a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Is the first space station on the moon going to be an Israeli settlement? Hello?
No. Right now, we don't have that capability. But there is a very good chance that if something like that does happen, it might be international, and putting us in that category is certainly highly, highly beneficial to us.
So in other words, you're saying that the first space station may be made up people, astronauts there that are from the USA, Russia, China, Israel.
That could very well happen. The International Space Station that...
You know, I think it's like we're speaking with you on the moon, because the connection is so bad. It's like you're on the moon yourself. Try to sum up. You have about less than 60 seconds. Go ahead, sum up.
Okay. The International Space Station has people from the United States and Russia on it now. So there is cooperation already. But putting up people to actually live on the moon is a challenge that unfortunately is not yet being addressed. And I think mankind really, really needs for it to be addressed, and very, very soon, because we do have problems that cannot be solved trivially on the planet and can be solved from the outer space.
Well, very, very interesting. We'll see what things we're going to be able to benefit from this program, from Israel Space Program. And I want to thank you very much for coming on the show, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, to speak with us about the Israeli space program, which is always brings pride in people's minds when they speak about it here in Israel. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. When we get back, we are going to be speaking with Shifra Hoffman. She's going to be telling you why she says no matter who wins the upcoming elections, it's not going to change much. She'll tell you why.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
We live in the age of information, but not inspiration. If you're like me, you're looking to be inspired, to reach higher, to connect more, and to grow. Well, if you want to get warm, you need to stand close to the fire. And if you want to catch fire, you need to stand close enough to get hit by the sparks. Join me, Penina Taylor, as we walk with people who have embarked on a spiritual journey towards Torah. We'll uncover what started them on their journey and what truths they discovered along the way. So prepare to be inspired as we take a leap of faith every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Israel News Talk Radio.
Back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. And we're trying to get Shifra Hoffman on the phone. Let's see going on here. One moment.
Hello?
Okay, do we have Shifra on with us?
Hello?
Hi, Shifra, how are you? This is Tamar Yona. We had trouble getting you on the show. I'm glad that you were able to call in. Shifra is on here today. She is going to be speaking about the Israeli elections and why she believes that whoever wins, it's not going to make much of a difference. It's not going to solve Israel's problems. Go ahead, Shifra.
Yes, well, I'm not a prophet. All I can say is, if you study Jewish history, mostly you know that nothing works except what God himself, blessed is he, told the Jewish people to do. We didn't do it. Instead of driving out the enemy, we gave him a worldwide platform. We gave him guns. We gave him money. We give him land. And we even released murderers. That's all under Bibi's watch. Now comes the left, and they say they'll probably do even more. We have to learn to see that since the founding of Israel in 1948, with God's help, our return to our ancient and modern homeland, there's never been peace by any prime minister, any election. Why? Because they don't really understand the problem. If you don't believe what God told you to do, how can you be successful? On the other hand, the Arabs believe what they believe. You can laugh at it, you can say it's ridiculous, that they'll get 72 virgins in heaven. They believe it, and they're willing to go the full nine yards to enforce that, even using murder as a weapon against Jews. So the bottom line is, if we really want peace, we have to return to the Torah that God gave us, and return to the land and settle it. We have a right to our one land. We know that this is biblically, historically so, and anything else will not work. It's a waste of money.
All right, so what do you have to say to people then about the elections?
Well, I'll say that it doesn't really matter. You know, it's become polarization. The right wants the right, and it's not really right. I don't have any grudge. Really a grudge? Maybe I do have a grudge against Bibi. He gave up 80% of Hebron to the Arabs. He released murderous terrorists. He gave Turkey, that anti-Semitic country, $20 million because Turkey said there won't be good relations. They took the $20 million and there's no good relations. So I don't think that he's really a prime minister that we waited for. He's certainly not the Messiah. On the other hand, any general that we had who ran for office, Barak and Rabin, I don't even want to go into what disasters they were. So I say again, people are going to say, well, who do you want to vote for? You can vote if you feel that you have to vote. I don't feel that way at all. I feel that we have to go back to the Torah that God gave us. And again, Tshuva and Shuva, Jews should leave the horrible anti-Semitic outside of Israel world. We have Jews are being persecuted day by day, and they prefer to stay there. That is not anything that anybody in their right mind would do. So let's go to the bottom line. God Almighty will give us the land. Well, he gave us, but he will protect it if we do what he says. Tshuva, return to the Torah, and Shuva, pick up, pack up, and come home to Israel.
All right, Shifra, let's discuss something that you had... You were talked about, you're saying basically that whoever is elected, it's not going to save Israel.
No, because you know, tomorrow, I think, and all the listeners know that in their heart, it seems to be the goal of the elections that we should drive out Bibi and get Gantz and whoever, Lapid, and that's the whole struggle, not real issues. The real issues are being ignored. The issues of having Jews potentially, God forbid, to face annihilation in America and around the world as the anti-Semitic, virulent anti-Semitic attacks continue. They want to outlaw the Shechita. They want to outlaw circumcision. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about Jews who have no leadership. If you don't understand yourself where you belong, so the leaders should say it, and they don't say it. They don't speak about Aliyah, you know, to leave. Most of them don't. And the other issue is that they don't understand that once you are the captain of the ship, your obligation is to save the ship, not your seat in the Knesset.
Shifra, you were, but your stance here is again saying, that's what you wrote me, that whoever wins, it's not really going to solve Israel's problems. And I want to say something here that a lot of people in talking about the elections, they always say, well, you know, some people, right? The right wingers will say, well, we want the right wing. But if the left wing wins, it's not the end of the world either, because then at least there'll be a strong opposition. And when the right wing gets into power with Netanyahu and he wants to do things like give away land or not hit the Hamas hard enough or whatever, then there's nobody strong on the opposition on the right to keep him in line. So what do you have to say about all of that?
Tamar, there is no strong opposition, whether it's right or left. Who gave up the land? Who gave up Hebron? Who gave up all of the beautiful sacred land that they gave to the Arabs? The Arabs in their wildest dreams never believed after all the wars and the peacetime terror that Israel would fold like that. It was the right wing who gave up land and also the left wing who gave up land. It was the right wing who released terrorists and so did the left wing. So it doesn't matter. As far as I'm concerned, again, I want to stress, Jews, if you love Israel and you want to protect yourself and your family, the only chance you have is to pick up, pack up, come home to Israel, settle the land, and also, of course, first and foremost, to come back to God, because he created the world and he gave us the land. We have no other deed to the land of Israel except the Bible. And the Bible says specifically, when you come into your land, drive out the enemy before he becomes a thorn in your side and thistles in your eyes. And then settle it. Every part of the land of Israel belongs to us.
Shifra, where can people contact you?
Well, before they do that, I want to say that Purim is coming, and of course, the great miracle. Who would ever believe that an evil person like Haman, who had big power, would come, to hang him? He would be hung, and his sons would be hung too, because God reversed the entire situation to save our people. If you want to have power, don't look at the election. Look at your Bible. Look at the Tanakh and do what it says. I would like to ask the listeners, since I'm the head of the Victims of Arab Terror Organization, please remember when you celebrate Purim, these poor, struggling families who need your help, send something, whatever you can, to that, Victims of Arab Terror, P.O. Box 32103, Jerusalem. And then you can really celebrate Purim with a clear conscience, knowing that you care about your people.
Shifra, just repeat the address again for anybody who didn't have their pencil out.
Okay, it's that, which stands for Victims of Arab Terror, VAT, P.O. Box 32103, Jerusalem. You'll never know how much they appreciate it. And I'm not a paid person. I don't take wages. And I'm glad that God gave me the ability, blessed be he, to do this. And tomorrow I want to say Yasher Koach to you, providing the platform so that people should hear the truth.
All right. And you can also go to her website at victimsofarabterror.org. Her contact info will be there as well. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Tamara. Bye-bye.
And we've come to the end of the show, but before I sign off, I wanted to just read you a part here, which I found very interesting. There was a interview with Moshe Feiglin from the Zahut Party. Moshe Feiglin is taking a libertarian stance, and this was with an interview with, I believe it was Channel 20 on Israeli TV, if I'm not mistaken. Just want to check my notes here if I can, but if there's any mistake, I'll try to post it on the page where this is posted. But one of the questions asked him was, your party has a detailed platform, but many parties don't, including the Likud. Why don't they have platforms explaining their positions? And Feiglin's answer was, because Israeli politics today is not a politics of ideas, but a politics of people. What's the difference, he asks, between the two-state solution of Netanyahu and the two-state solution of labor leader Avi Gabay? What's the difference between the socialist economy of Kulanu Party, head Moshe Kahlon, and the socialist economy you can expect from Gabay or Yesh Atid leader Yair Lapid? All that's left in Israeli politics is personal fighting. The Likud doesn't have a platform at all, he says. And Israel Resilience leader Benny Gantz, that's the left wing, in order to get 15 seats in the Knesset, is trying not to say one word. It's ridiculous that Zehut, his party, Moshe Feiglin's party, is doing exactly the opposite. And you can see that Moshe Feiglin is answering questions. He's going, he wants to debate the issues. And even on this morning's Israel morning television talk show, news show in the morning, it was very interesting. They were complaining themselves, and some of these people are left-wingers, that Benny Gantz does not come on and do interviews. All he does is go in front of a camera and read off a teleprompter. They don't let him talk. And one of the reasons that a lot of people on the ground are saying is because every time he opens his mouth, he puts his foot in it. So that would be very interesting. I think it's very right what Feiglin said, that this is a campaign between people and not platforms. So go and read the platforms of the parties that you're voting for. All right. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Write me, Tamar at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.